Hi, I'm Masaba Gupta. Each week on How I Masaba from Luminary, I talk to one incredible woman about how they do, well, them. These are the inspirational mindsets, necessary daily practices, and only funny in hindsight experiences that have defined and continue to drive our culture's greatest. I remember the first time I saw a Meera Nair film. I must have been 15 or 16 at the time, and the film was Monsoon Wedding. Of course, I knew who Meera was. Her reputation had preceded her, and she had already won the Camera d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival and was touted as this young, amazing filmmaking talent from India. But for some reason, I always considered her as a filmmaker who was making films for Western audiences. And then I saw Monsoon Wedding and was completely blown away. Because here was a filmmaker who didn't feel the need to explain India to the West. She didn't feel the need to translate our culture, our sensibilities, our obsessions, our fault lines, in a way that made sense to them. She just captured with her camera what she saw and felt growing up with complete and utter honesty. And for the 15-year-old me, that was everything. That's what I was trying to bring to my work every day. This is who we are, and this is what you will get. I think she was the first cultural export of Indian cinema who showed us what India Proud truly is. And I couldn't have been more thrilled to speak to my guest today, the indomitable Meera Nair.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So I'm going to start with not the obvious question. And I was talking to my mom a couple of weeks back about just her formative years. And she also grew up in Delhi, of course, in Parpar Ganj, so old Delhi. And she was telling me a very funny thing that she always wanted to go to Miranda House, but her parents were conservative, so they sent her to Janki Devi Mahavidyalaya. And she was thoroughly disappointed because she said that, "I just didn't make the right friends. I didn't meet the right people who could have shaped my understanding of the world." You went to Miranda House, and of course, you met some wonderful people, Amitabh Ghosh, Shashi Tharoor, to name a few. I'm curious to ask you how much that decision changed your gaze of the world. And do you think it's possible to, you know, change your destiny as you grew up if you hadn't gone to a Miranda House, if you hadn't had those friends?
Well, I think there is nothing more powerful or influential than a good teacher. And a teacher comes in many ways into one's life. My, I think, influences were even prior to Miranda House. I was a student. I was a kid of civil servants in Orissa, in Bhubaneswar, in the early, you know, late 50s, early 60s, when my father, who was in the administrative service, was positioned there from Punjab with his also Punjabi bride, who was all of 19 in the year 1950. So they were part of the cadre that was creating a new capital in Orissa. Anyhow, so we were sent, me and my brothers were sent to like very local government schools. Like we went to a school called Ispat General School. It was a steel school. And that's where we went in Rourkela and so on. My first act of, you could say, quiet rebellion was when my two older brothers were sent to Mayo, a boarding schools, fancier boarding schools from Orissa. But I was kept behind there to go to a local convent. And it was then that I sort of surreptitiously and secretly applied to the nuns of of the Irish Catholic Loreto convent that I had been in. And then lo and behold, at the age of 12 and a half, 13, I was given admission in the middle of the school year, which is pretty unconventional, in a small boarding school in Simla called Tara Hall. Because it was in that school that the Shakespeare Wala gang would come and perform Shakespeare. In this case, it was Barry John and Marcus Murch and all of those guys. And they would perform like A. Macbeth, and they would perform experimental Shakespeare. It blew my mind, you know, it really did. And so that was the first opening. It was during sitting for that those senior Cambridge exams and then doing somehow very well and topping India that I was offered a Cambridge University POPOS scholarship, which I very quickly turned down because I really, really genuinely and still do have a chip on my shoulder about the Brits and about the Raj and what they had done to us. And I did not want to study in England. So I turned it down and I went to Miranda House because that my brothers went to Stephen's across the road. And I did not know much more beyond that. But I thought, chalo, mahi chale, type of scene. But for me, Miranda House was about a great friendship with women, great women, but mostly a devotion to the theater. Because I became part of the theater action group and I became part of a sort of a repertory company almost.
Yeah.
And performed much more than I studied.
Wow. No, that's interesting. And I think all of us need that one moment where you said, you know, blew my mind. I think it's very rare that your mind is blown. It's very rare that you're broken open. But what I wanted to come back to was one of your very famous lines, which actually introduced me to Meera Nair, the human. I always knew you as the filmmaker, as the artist, thanks to Monsoon Wedding. But I think when I heard this one line that you said, if we don't tell our stories, no one else will. I mean, I just feel like when I saw that and I heard that, I remember hearing it over and over again, made a lot of sense to me. And you've been telling our stories from this part of the world, to a truly global audience for a very long time now. But what strikes me about these stories is that your gaze is very much Indian. How do you maintain that Indian gaze when you make films about India?
Well, I don't think of it as one gaze or another. I think of it as my gaze. And India, as you know, has been such a syncretic and layered and place of abject, of something so intensely old and traditional. But when we rediscover the traditions, let's say, Oma Janta and Ellora, these days I'm studying the caves and I'm studying just the line drawings of Oma Janta and Ellora. Anyway, so this is the India where we have come from. It's not one thing. It's never been one thing. So I have a kind of, I swallow that up. I get completely inspired by what our nation, you know, country and our culture is, but also how little I actually know about the past and, you know, in the quest for the present. I never left to leave India. I never left ever, even now, thinking of myself as an immigrant. I'm leaving and I'm not coming back. Waise to tha hi nahi, you know. So I didn't have a plan like that. What became sharper and sharper once I was there, once I was studying new languages to tell stories with beyond theater, you know, once I discovered cinema verite, film, and then later narrative film, it was always the inspiration somehow, more or less, was always fueled by one's own place, you know, and that place that you could see with different eyes when I returned, you know, when I made Salaam Bombay, so many of my Bombay director friends would come and talk to me, ki yaar, Meera, tumne to international picture bana di, aur mere paas pata hai ye story hai, Michael Caine bhi ho sakta hai usme, Ben Kingsley bhi ho sakta hai, main bana sakta hu ye story. So I said, maine to unka socha hi nahi tha. Anyway, that's the path I, without having a big plan, that's the path I went on.
Yeah, I think not to make it clickbaity, but like just the story first and the star later, I think, to sum it up in some way.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of making first films like that is that you don't know what comes later. There is no expectation of reward. there was no model for me. There was that a Hindi film could play in Cannes and to, could go to the Oscars and could work in Liberty Cinema and sell tickets here and run for 27 weeks and then also win, you know, major whatever it is, awards in film festivals. There was no model for that. So I never thought about it. It was one step at a time and doing one's absolute best, and also big, big, big lesson, preserving one's instinct.
Preserving one's instinct.
Yeah. Mm. So that you're not pandering to the ignorance in the West of the Indian world. You're not saying, you know, you're not explaining. You're explaining by revealing the world, not teaching them.
Yeah. And I think that this is something that a lot of, not just a filmmaker, but even a writer, designer like myself, in some way, anyone who's following a creative pursuit, I think they have the same, would you say, the same gaze, the same approach to most things that they do. Of course, now we've all become a bit corrupt, but we can talk about that later. You obviously have a unique voice, a very unique identity that makes your work recognizable. I want to just think about, want you to think about, was there a time where you feel like, okay, I found my identity. This is my, you know, it's like looking looking at a sari, right? Or looking at a Manjeet Bawa painting. You instantly know. Nobody has to say it out loud. Did you find that moment, or did you just sort of, were you just floating through life, floating through whatever you were doing, and it found itself for you?
I would say, well, I never floated through. I always grappled,
blazed
and struggled.
Through life.
Not blazed. No. Mm-hmm. I don't.
No.
By floated, I mean, you know, in ecstasy. I am very interested in ecstasy. Don't get me wrong. I need ecstasy to be as disciplined as I am. You know, I have both things going. That's not the point. But I mean, I do. My father did it to me to always have a plan and to have a purpose and to have a goal and to have to work towards something, you know, to work on idea. Not I dismissed his notions of success. That was different. And talking about like organizing oneself, you know, to do something and to have a plan. So that I did always.
Yes. Getting up in the morning and saying, what is my purpose today? I think you always had that.
You have to self-motivate. And it's damn hard. Very, very hard. It's equally hard today as it was before. The moment that, for me, that I felt that, God damn it, I think I have an audience for my own work, which I'd never realized because I was always dhobi ka kutta, you know, neither here nor there. You know, I was bilkul desi, you know, C2x31 Tilak Marg, a Delhi socialist kid, went to whatever it is, the Harvard of it all, and so had no illusions about the Western elite that was around me, in a sense. Wo sab dekha tha, but the kind of dreams or the kind of stories, take it in Salaam Bombay, where it's chalu, where it's painful, where it's in the vocab of Bombay, you know, patois, which had never been actually put on screen much before then. All those things, I used to wonder, but not wonder too much, because I believe that who will listen, who will see, who will buy tickets, what will happen, you know. But I wouldn't contort myself in misery, because I would, the misery was reserved for the struggle, how to raise the money, how to do it, all of those things. But then
the stuff creative people hate, dislike.
Yeah. But I was always practical. I've always produced my own films and directed them. So I've always had to cut my cloth to size. So I don't hate it. I embrace it so that it's a way to make me do what I do with utmost freedom, even though I never have enough. But that's okay.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, just saying, but it was when I made Mississippi Masala, which was about the black and brown relationship, which was with Denzel. At that time, he was about to win an Oscar. He was not a big deal before Mississippi Masala. All those things, it was still the enormous pressure to cast a white person instead of him. Straightforward, direct pressure. Okay, make room for a white protagonist, is what I was told, and not doing it. And, you know, really telling the story of the African continent, the Ugandan expulsion of Idi Amin to you know, of the Ugandan Asians who came to Mississippi and ran motels, and this absurd trick of history that happened in actually the setting of the story of Mississippi Masala truly had not been seen in these juxtaposed like this, you know. But because of the success, thankfully, of Salaam Bombay, I could raise, I think it was $3.5 million. It was very, very little money, given the fact that we were doing two continents and movie stars and all of that. But we managed to do it. Anyway, it was 1991, and I was publicizing the film all over the world. And when I went to England, and I saw Curzon Cinema and the lines around the block outside the cinema, I was just about to speak with the film, I saw that the lines were all hybrid people, hybrid couples. You know, that it was all like black, brown, white, mixed race couples standing to see this film, which one of them I overheard was saying, this is going to be our anthem. This is going to be our anthem. And I thought to myself, my God, you know, they are actually coming to see themselves on screen. And I really might be actually having an audience for my own work, you know, in this way. It was the first time that I thought, wow, it might be possible. Because, you know, at that point, I was coming from, I'm still surrounded by a Caucasian universe, man. You know, I remember, like my other friends, they would cast Kate Winslet. And they would have a name above the marquee, you know, even though she was young and unknown. I could cast Tavu and it wouldn't make a difference. I'd have to educate them. Or I would cast, of course, Sarita Chowdhury or any of them. But none of these names, even today, now Alia Bhatt will make a difference. And still, I work a lot sometimes with, you know, I've worked with Reese Witherspoon and I've worked very closely with Uma Thurman and I've worked with, you know, Juliette Lewis and all of them, and we love each other, just love each other. And they'll always ask me, Mira, when are we doing it again? You know, what are you, you know? And I joke with them and I said, as soon as I'm interested in white people, I'll be back to you, babe. They get like, oh my God, Mira, you never change. But it is like that, Vasava. I don't, of course, when I'm offered things which I like, I take it on. You know, like I just did National Treasure, which is a bit of a romp. But I could get to find fantastic young talent across the world for this Disney series. But the things that make my heart beat are different. Are what I actually do, you know, which now is a film on Amrita Shergill, who like I guess a little bit like me, really has straddled two worlds to make a completely unique vocabulary of her own painting. So. And those are the things that I will, like, not sleep at night for. There's an atmosphere of shame in the Western world, in Hollywood, that they have ignored us and the the non-white world for so long that it's absolutely shameful. So this has been called upon, you know, between the Black Lives Matter movement, between the Me Too movement, all of those movements that have definitely lit a fire, you know. The fire is sometimes burning, but also is going off into embers because people are, and I've literally heard this expression in Los Angeles, I got diversity fatigue, what people say. You know, it's like, I'm just diversity fatigue. You know, like we are some kind of some kind of a contamination. So wo sab hai, the atmosphere is there where we can be heard more because there is a level of shame that we have not been heard before, and we are equally good and equally commercial and so on. So yes, you can get heard and you can get seen and looked for in a more hospitable environment today than was ever before. It might even be sometimes more lopsided because people are only sometimes in the last year or two, it's only looking in one direction, which is almost, you know, too much. But anyway, so it's a more hospitable environment for those of us who come from a non-white world. But at the same time, as I said, say that, you've got to be absolutely excellent at what you do to be noticed or to be successful or to ride the wave or to negotiate. That goes without saying. The standard has to be
high. I think that's true. The standard has to be high. It's not like just because you're from a certain part of the world and that's the part of the world that's getting noticed, will you just get noticed? I think the content that's coming out, the stories that are coming out.
Exactly.
So you also have a great eye for spotting some very talented performers and actors. And I did not know this. I looked it up. It's quite amazing. Irfan Khan, of course, the best. And we love him. We bless him. Vijay Raaz, Raghuveer Yadav, Randeep Hooda, even Riz Ahmed. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But how do you make these inspired choices? All of these incredible talents who are now, I don't want to say veterans, but just so established and so, you know that a film can be backed if they're in it. How do you find these people? What do you see and what really gets you about them?
In each one, a different thing. And usually, I am looking for something that is inspired by the character that person is going to play, you know. So, and you know, I came from cinema verite. Masaba, cinema verite is the cinema of truth. It's a style of documentary filmmaking where you enter people's lives and you submit and surrender and are humble about them as they reveal their lives to your camera. So real people, the truth and power of real people and what really happens in life is infinitely more powerful than fiction can ever dream up. So that tradition of like living and working like that, whether it's in the tenements of Antop Hill with strippers or whether it's in Ahmedabad pole or old house with, you know, a man who leaves to make his living as a subway newsstand worker in Manhattan, all these worlds, you see life for what it really is, in its richness, in its warts, in its ugliness, in its beauty, both everything. And so that, I think, really taught me how to love, how to look for that truth, you might say, in actors, in people that I was asking to act. And many times, they were not actors before, you know. Many times, it was their first. Most times, all these people you're mentioning are first films with me, you know. And I've cast people on my park outside, you know, who's taking a walk, you know, because she looks in a certain way that's interesting. And then I read her and she's got comic timing and she's authentic. She's what I wanted, let's say, Punjabi auntie, you know. So because of, I think, living in the cinema verite world, the documentary world, where I just surrender to people and create an equation where they, hopefully, I respect them, they respect me, that I get them to do what I want them to do, but using their spirit, which I have seen in them, you know. So with Irfan, he was 18 years old when I laid eyes on him. He was in a basement class in National School of Drama. He was 18. He was gangly. He had the same body he had later. But he had those hooded eyes. And the best thing about him in that class was how he observed others, how he received what was going on. And it was extraordinarily focused and really like somebody serious, you know. And then I started talking to him, and he had a quality, because I knew I was going to work with real street kids. He had a quality where he had such, what can I say, such respect in his soul for others, that he did not ever for 1 minute look like another class of person, like another, you know. He looked like he was like somebody transparently dissolving into what he was looking at, in a way. So, and you and I know that class is such a huge issue in our country. You can tell where somebody's gone to school by just looking at them sometimes. That to meet somebody like Irfan, who did not emanate anything about his class or anything while he was doing something from the roots, from the ground up, it was that struck me. And then, of course, a friendship started, and I liked him. And he wanted to have this adventure where he just stopped school and come with me. And we lived together in an empty flat for about 5 months in Sangam, in Pedder Road. And any kid who didn't have a house for the night would come there. Anyway, I guess the spirit of people, given what I'm looking for, it has to mesh, you know. And one good thing is, having done it like this from the beginning, I trust myself to do it. You know, I don't have to, because for the jahan se bhi paisa mil raha hai na, it doesn't make a difference to them whether it's Rabubir or it's Shafiq Sayed from the street. They sab ek hi jaise, you know what I mean? It's not like I'm saying De Niro and then I'll put an Indian guy. It's not like that, na? So it's all of us are lumped in. So I never had to tell anyone about who I'm casting. I just had to make my world up and then make the film, you know. So that's how I've continued.
All right, Meera, last questions, where you can make them as short, as elaborate as you like. So it can even be one word. What is the one word that you hope people will always use to describe you?
Brave.
You have a very famous line, skin of an elephant, heart of a poet. But what is your most favorite line ever? What is the one line that you heard any point in your life which changed your life?
Funny, it was a line from the mother in Sri Aurobindo in the ashram. And she would say, no words, act.
Ah. What is the one, or who is the one collaborator you are most keen to work with?
I really want to work with Sudeep Sharma, the writer of Patal Lok.
And last question. What is the worst advice a mother can give her child or her children?
The worst advice is to imitate others. Is terrible advice. To compare yourself with others and to become them is terrible advice.
Wonderful. Meera, thank you so much for being here. I had a lot to learn and a lot to take back. And I wish you all the very best, Meera. Thank you. In the next episode of How I Am a Saba, I am speaking to the acclaimed lawyer, Rinalini Deshmukh.
You were listening to How I'm a Saba only on Luminary. The podcast is produced by Monisha Singhatyal and Rainshine Entertainment. Prithika Bajaj is our creative producer and Palash Kulkarni is our executive producer. The research for this episode was done by Anushka Mukherjee. The mix engineer for this episode is Ankit Thakur. Artist management by Versus Entertainment LLP. The music supervisor for the episode is Ankur Srivastav. The episode was recorded at Bayout Studios, Mumbai.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.